It's going to be a wild ride. So buckle yourselves in.
Hello and welcome to Stramash, the podcast of the NFL Scotland team. I'm sorry, there is no Cameron Hobbs this evening. He's overdosed on poutine and is currently in the Edinburgh Royal Infirmary getting a transfusion to get rid of all that nasty potato stuff that he imbibed while in Toronto. But we are joined by Ian Stephen, Gordon McGuinness, to talk about, well, we're going to look at the draft. We're going to look at wide receivers and running backs. The skill positions, as they are often called, although running back is a skill position. We'll get Gordon's thoughts on that in a moment. We're going to have a look at some of the, possibly the ones you've heard of, and then possibly some of the receivers that you haven't heard of to see if there's going to be value further down that draft. And teams like the New Orleans Saints might actually be able to afford to sign someone. So, as I say, I'm joined by Gordon McGuinness. I'm joined by Ian Stephen. But I'm also joined to make his Stramash debut, the man behind Dynasty Hot Seat, the mastermind. Welcome, Max. Good to have you.
Yeah, thanks very much, boys. Thanks for inviting me on. Can't wait to get chatting about some of these skill positions. Should be good fun.
Now, so just introduce yourself. Obviously, you don't like American football because you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan, but we'll get over that and see where you go. A couple of quick questions. Where did the love of the game come from?
Very randomly, I was sitting in my flat in Edinburgh with my mates, and one of my friends was watching American football. I was like, oh, I might start watching American football. And there was a Kansas City Chiefs game on, and Jamaal Charles had the ball and just kind of did Jamaal Charles things. I was like, all right, I'll support Kansas City then. And that was it. There's no great story behind it, unfortunately. It's just I seen Jamaal Charles play and he was pretty good, and that's it.
Well, it's terrific. We're glad that you've come along. And what we like in that, Gordon, is we don't like glory hunters, but anybody who just picks a team at random is absolutely fine with us on the podcast. Gordon, let's start with the wide receivers. And PFF, a company you may well have heard of, seems to be high on one or two receivers. Tell us a little bit about perhaps, say, Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State.
Yeah, so, I mean, this wide receiver class, I think everyone kind of accepts that there's three guys at the top that are separate, have separated themselves from everyone else. It's Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze. Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously, as well as being incredibly productive in college, has good stock, I think is probably the best way to describe it. His dad's a Hall of Fame wide receiver. He played at, you know, one of the biggest schools in the country. And anytime you watched him in college, he dominated. He's almost definitely, not quite because there is a little bit of debate, but almost definitely going to be the first wide receiver off the board. He's got the size you look for in a prototypical number one receiver. A little bit, like, frame-wise, he's a little bit like AJ Green was for the Cincinnati Bengals in that, like, he's not really bulky, but he's got, like, a good bit of height, good bit of length. Like, really feels like one of the safest prospects in this draft, so you would imagine that five is probably the latest he comes off the board.
Yeah, we'll talk about where he might potentially go in a moment or two. Ian, he is the kind of receiver that a lot of teams are looking for. As Gordon mentioned, it's almost that absolutely stick-on guaranteed first rounder that you cannot miss with.
Yeah, in comparison to who would be the number two in the draft, especially with the news that's coming out this week about Malik Nabers, and propels Harrison even further into that can't-miss class. It probably put him out of the Joe Alt as well at tackle, just because they both came from NFL stock. They know exactly what they're getting into. They know how to prepare. They know how to turn up at training camp fit, ready to go. They know how to manage the body in the off season, etc., etc. So you're not going to go wrong with bringing Harrison in.
And Mags, I guess from the fantasy point of view, somebody like him is a dream for any fantasy football player, because he's not just going to be one of these guys that gets slotted in. He is a genuine WR1 for most teams at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in, for anyone listening, not really sure what Dynasty Fantasy Football is, the game I specialize in. It's not really like your standard leagues where you all get together, you all draft your team and everyone plays, and then you get together again the next year and then you draft a different, completely different team. Whatever team you draft initially, that stays as your team. So team I drafted 5 years ago, that's the team I keep. And instead of another full redraft every year, we do a rookie draft. So people are losing their minds about Marvin Harrison Jr. and trying to get them on their team, because you get to keep this guy on your team for, what, 10 years? He looks like this kind of slam dunk prospect. Yeah, you're right, mentioned his dad. He's got absolutely everything on my show. I get different guests on every single week. I've asked every single one, are there any flaws in his game? No one's come up with an answer yet. He looks bulletproof.
And I think that's always interesting because, you know, there have been prospects in the past, and what tends to trip them up, Gordon, is the off-field stuff. I mean, we've seen it. Henry Ruggs, I think, was the most recent example of that, of a wide receiver who went and everybody expected big things, and, well, he was a complete arsehole, but that's just the way it goes. Harrison, coming from that NFL stop, looks like he is going to be solid. But Malik Nabers is not delighting everybody at the moment, Gordon.
So I've totally missed this Malik Nabers stuff. But what I will say, though, is, like, obviously Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't think's done anything, but Marvin Harrison Sr. did have some stuff at the end of his career, like once he was retired. So it's maybe not entirely fair to like blame other players for stuff like that. What's Nabers done?
Has Nabers not got reputation of being a tad difficult?
Yes, Diva attached him.
He's a wide receiver. Like, do you know what? I don't want a wide receiver that isn't a bit like that. Like,
who's the greatest Cardinals receiver of all time?
Larry Fitzgerald.
And did Larry Fitzgerald have any sort of diva characteristics? And was Larry Fitzgerald genetically enhanced through his father into the game?
Okay, but flip side, did Randy Moss have any flaws in his off-field or diva-ish behavior? Of course he did, and he was still really good.
He bumped out of two teams. I mean, he left the Vikings, left the Raiders, and you could argue he had to go to the Patriots and Tom Brady to find success.
This is the thing with wide receivers, though. It's the viral tweet around, like, the tweet you get from a quarterback's like, love my teammates, praise to God, whatever. The tweet you get from a running back's like, you know, on to the next week, all that stuff. And then the wide receiver one's like, the subtle knife stabs you in the back or something. Most wide receivers are a little bit wild, a little bit crazy. Like, I'm fine with it.
Max, from your point of view, when you're drafting in a dynasty league, you've got to take into account, I think the All Blacks call it the no assholes, you know, no assholes in the squad, because, you know, and we've seen in recent times in that they've played a guy once or twice and he's just been hoiked out the squad. The dressing room's important. So when you're looking at in your dynasty league, you are wanting the kind of Larry Fitzgerald type who might hang around, because the problem with getting other people is that they can bounce around to teams and they can be out the game for a while.
But we also have to consider this is sort of around late March, early April. It is officially silly season when it comes to, you know, NFL news. Like, if you remember, Ja'Marr Chase didn't know how to catch an NFL football around this time whenever he was about to get drafted because there weren't any lines on it. So these kind of stories come out and you're like, you know what, until he's actually on an NFL team surrounded by professionals, I'm not going to take things too seriously unless there's any actual felonies or any actual firsthand stories shown with any evidence. So to me, it's just someone's putting this article out because they want a few clicks on their Twitter or whatever.
Yeah, we'll have a word about Cameron and spreading malicious rumors about LSU receivers. Romo Odunze from Washington, ranked 6 on the PFF big board. He's one of these guys that I think if he was to fall to you, Ian, you wouldn't be too unhappy. And he's probably just been a little bit overlooked because of what's ahead of him.
Yeah, he could be number one in majority of our receiving classes. The only kind of knock on him is maybe he doesn't have the same kind of straight line speed as the other two guys do. But, I mean, if you end up having him, you'd be incredibly happy. And if he drops outside the top 10, then you'd be getting a bargain in terms of talent.
He does feel the one that has the biggest chance to fall a little bit, just because I think the other two definitely are the first two off the board, at which point, like, some of the other, like, Odunze kind of falls into that range where Joe Alt comes off the board. Atlanta probably take an edge defender like Dallas Turner or someone like that, at which point, like, Odunze could slip a little bit, but, like, the absolute floor for him feels like 10, 11, and I think he probably goes in the top six picks.
Well, let's run through this very, very quickly then. Chicago Bears from Carolina. Are we agreed they're going quarterback?
Yes, that's Caleb Williams. I think the odds now, Cameron's not on this podcast, so we can talk about odds, are like -5,000 or something like that. So that's locked in at this point.
Okay. Yeah, he's only taken one meeting, right?
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't need to take any more, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. He doesn't want to spoil his nails or anything like that. Washington Commanders, where are they going? Are they going to go quarterback? Are they going to surprise us?
Yeah. No, they're going quarterback, but the question is which one they go.
Yeah. And we'll save that for another pod. I'll just put quarterback down there. So New England Patriots, again. You never used to be able to tell with the Patriots because Belichick never gave really anything away, but it is looking more and more like they have to go QB as well.
Yep. That's the fair assumption.
I can see them trading out of there as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I can see everyone outside of Chicago in that top bit, I can see trading down. I can even see Washington moving out. But I think regardless of whether or not someone's trading up or not, I think it goes quarterback, 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 and then maybe even at four again, quarterback. It depends what happens with Arizona.
So if Arizona stay at four, are they looking at Harrison?
Yeah, I think if they stay at four, they take Harrison.
So if you're, because I always like to do this, so if you're Marvin Harrison, Ian, how happy or unhappy are you at landing in Arizona?
7 out of 10.
Okay.
State that doesn't pay taxes, nice warm weather.
Yep, that's fair. So if we take Harrison off the board at four, the Chargers at five, are they interested in a receiver?
Yes, but what they are building is the 2019 Ravens, just with a quarterback that's not Lamar Jackson. So if I had to make an educated guess now, I would say that the Chargers are the team that Minnesota move up with for McCarthy. Mm. And then they wind up with, would that be 11 and 23? And they can then go and take a right tackle at 11.
Okay, so six is then the Giants. Is it neighbors to the Giants, or do the Giants have got so many other needs though? But do they also need something that is a little bit flashy in a headline? I mean, there is nothing sexy about a defensive tackle getting picked here.
No.
Mags, would you see the Giants investing in what could be a real good player for them?
Well, they could sort of go. They need a pass catcher, but they also need to shore up that offensive line a little bit. So Brock Bowers isn't out of the options here for the Giants there. I think he is good enough to go in that top 10. So he could be someone they could fix two problems with one player.
Yeah, and that's potential. So
absolutely wet my pants with laughter.
I was just about to say, let's go to the voice of reason, and the voice of reason spoke ahead of things. Expand upon your laughter. Mr. Stephen.
He's a tight end. He's an undersized tight end. You're not picking him six. Why would you go for somebody who's not as talented as one of the wide receivers that you could pick? No, Bowers is going to drop below 15.
That might be. So I think you're right. I think he will. I think he'll fall. If he doesn't, if the Jets don't take him at 10, I think he probably does fall either Indianapolis or Cincinnati, I think is probably where he winds up. I will say, though, like, he could be a better receiver in the NFL than the other wide, like the top wide receivers in this class. So he's a really good receiver. I do worry about his size, though. Like, I think that's absolutely fair. And I don't love that he didn't do a lot of the testing in Indianapolis, because that tells me that he was probably bulking up his size a little bit to weigh in.
Hmm. Has any of you seen any issues with his size in college at all, ever?
No, none at all in college. But, And the other thing that worries me a little bit is you just look historically.
Yeah.
That you're quite often, if you draft a tight end in the first round, you're drafting someone else's future productive tight end. I don't really think that's fair for him, because I think he is like a really, really good prospect. But
yeah, I mean,
probably not good enough that I would pass on Neighbors or Adunze for.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at, he's a two-time national championship. He is, you know, he will be the first tight end off the board. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But if we stick for now to say that Neighbors goes to the Giants at six, you're then looking at Tennessee at seven. And again, you're trying to balance, Mags, the talent that's available against what you actually need. Now, we are specifically looking at wide receivers at the moment. Are Tennessee tempted by
Odunze? I don't think so. They have Hopkins and Ridley there now, right? And I don't think they really need to load up on wide receiver too much. They've got other holes they need to fill.
I would lock in now Joe Alt at number seven.
Yeah.
If Alt doesn't go in the top six picks, I don't see any way that Tennessee passes on him at seven.
Yeah. Bill Callahan, the first thing he did was hire his dad, and his dad's an offensive line coach, so his dad's making him draft a tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he is being tipped for Tennessee. That's where he is most likely to go. So if you are Atlanta Falcons and you've got your new quarterback in Kirk Cousins, Odunze would be a really nice addition there in Atlanta.
Yep. I think they go defense, though. This is probably where the first defender comes off the board. But I think this is where it gets interesting, though, and this is why this is why three or four quarterbacks being the thing that goes in the top five picks has so much impact on what happens the rest of the top 10. Because Odunze or Neighbors, the type of players that I think force Atlanta to seriously consider whether or not they actually do want to go and take another wide receiver instead of an edge defender.
So certainly a possibility there. Now, because what I want to do is, we know these three are going to go fairly quickly. What I'd like from you guys is to, in a moment, is to flag me up the type of receiver that the Saints might be able to get somewhere along the line. So Atlanta Falcons at 8, Chicago Bears at 9, New York Jets at 10, Minnesota Vikings at 11. Obviously, trades could happen. But from the way we look, Odunze, I don't think we'd go much past 12 if he escapes there at all.
Yeah, I think 11, I think, is probably the lowest any of those three guys go.
Interesting. Now, in terms of other wide receivers that's around, so the guys that, you know, aren't getting the headlines, but from a dynasty league point of view, Mags, you can't just pick wide receiver ones all along. And you might not want to answer this because your rivals may want to listen. Are there other receivers that you're potentially targeting that you think would be, you know, a good use of a draft pick along the way?
Yeah, so this is where after those big three, there's kind of quite a lot of debate going on about who's the next guy off the board. The name that seems to be coming up the most is Brian Thomas Jr. He appears to be the most consensus fourth wide receiver, along with a guy like Xavier Worthy, who you'll all know for breaking the combine 40-yard dash record. A couple of other guys that do come up, Troy Franklin has come up a couple of times. He's someone that's kind of fallen off a little bit because of his combine, but I wouldn't take that into account too much. So for me, it's sort of between those three as to who might come off the board next, but some people might take a chance. There's a guy, Keon Coleman, some people might take a chance on as well. He's a big, strong, fast receiver. So there's a lot of really good wide receivers left. This is really strong. In the dynasty circles, people are saying it's going to be a historically good wide receiver class, but that's been said before. So,
yeah, absolutely. And Ian, what's your take? I mean, the combine's important, but what stock do you put in combine against the film that they've already got, the games they've already played?
10%, maybe. I think it's good to get. It's especially good for players from the smaller schools because it's difficult to ascertain what somebody's athletic profile is if they're playing against Division II or Division III. But if you're playing in the ACC, everybody already knows what you can do. And doing something in your underpants on a running track is completely different to having 11 people on steroids trying to beat the living crap out of you. And time again, you're going to have players who excel in the combine, but they're just absolute duds once they get in the NFL, John Ross being the prime example. Yeah. And I think Xavier Worthy is possibly another example of that. He's probably outshone by his teammate at Texas in the wide receiver class rather than him. So I wouldn't read too much into combine performance. One thing I would actually read into combine performance is, did the player get injured while partaking in the combine? And if they did, maybe steer away from them because they look like they either can't prepare or they're prone to soft tissue injury.
Yeah, the combine thing that I think is fascinating is, so tracking data, in theory, could make the combine obsolete. So the combine this year, one of the best examples of this, is Keon Coleman ran the 40, and in his group of wide receivers was like one of the slowest guys. But they also had them with tracking chips on them. And when he ran the wide receiver gauntlet, he was the fastest out of his group. So like Troy Franklin was about 0.2 of a second faster than him in the 40, but Keon Coleman was faster than him in like the drill where he's running and catching passes. Where I think it's interesting though, like where I don't think the combine will become obsolete is I think there still is value in, okay, this is how fast I know you were in college. This is how fast I know you were doing this. However, when you have trained and focused this offseason on trying to be fast and trying to be explosive, you've done that. So if I'm an NFL team who has one of the best medical staffs of any sporting team in the world, which probably at least 10 of the NFL teams, if not more, do, or not medical, but like training staffs, I probably look at some of that data and go, okay, this guy wasn't as fast in college as I think he should have been. But actually, I can see the athletic build there that if we train them the right way, we'll actually be able to take it forward. So,
yeah, I'm always fascinated by the combine. The other thing is obviously that the chance, that personal touch to see how people prepare, you know, for these things. It's the little moments, isn't it? You know, just before they start, see how we react at the end. It's the little things that... You are looking, and body language isn't the answer to everything, Mags, but you can pick up signs and, you know, just how relaxed is somebody going into some of these exercises, you know, how do they focus? It's some of these intangibles almost that teams are looking to weigh up.
Yeah, especially like we mentioned Robo Dunze earlier, he stayed out on the practice field to run that three cone over and over and over again. You just know some GM there is just loving what they see there with Roman Dunze. He doesn't have to do that, but he's still, you know, in a combine, which might go down in history for the combine that none of the big prospects actually did anything. Roman Dunze was out there actually doing things over and over and over again.
I don't like to big up PFF all the time, Gordon, but I did like this line. Mitchell's fluidity at his size makes him a tough matchup, especially in the red zone. And then I realized, they weren't talking about
it. Wasn't
me.
About you.
It wasn't about. I mean, it would be right, obviously. I don't know, Mitchell at Texas. He's again one of these players that, yeah, I like. I saw a couple of Texas games, watched him. He catches the eye.
I don't like him that much.
Go on then. Tell me why not.
So, if he goes in the first round, he would be like historically bad in terms of like per snap production for a first round wide receiver. It's not that I think he's not a good wide receiver. It's just I don't really buy the hype as a first round player versus some of the other guys. So like one of the guys Mags mentioned earlier is Troy Franklin. I cannot for the life of me work out why Troy Franklin is now a mid to late second round prospect when he was before the combine, which he didn't do terribly and he just did fine. He was like a late first round. Everyone just accepted it. Now all of a sudden he's like mid to late second round. And I just think he's way more productive and as good an athlete as Mitchell is. So it's not that I don't like Mitchell. It's just that I think there's better players that are going to go in the range that he goes in.
And Ian, I guess this is where the draft guys make their money, is to spot these people that are going to give you exceptional value, who arguably should be first rounders, but somehow slip out and into the second round, and sometimes actually cause you a problem because you might not be expecting them still to be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a variety of things that can cause that. Usually running a slow 40 is one of the things that can push somebody down a board. It was really kind of interesting because Keon Coleman didn't run a very good 40, but then when he ran the gauntlet drill, because of being tracked, he ran faster than anyone else, and that was going to just completely and utterly confuse GMs about whether they're going to go for him or not, because he just looking at his tracking speed, he's borderline top 20 pick. But the guy that I really like that's probably going to be in the second round is Xavier Leggett. He reminds me a lot of Alshon Jeffrey, but maybe with a better attitude when he plays. Not the fastest, but he's so good at bodying receivers out. He's got really good catch radius and catch point, strong hands. He could be one of those guys that comes in that is perceived as having limited athletic ability, but ends up sticking on NFL rosters for a good decade or so.
It's not a name that I've come across. Which college was he out of?
South Carolina. Yeah.
South Carolina.
The thing that people don't love about him is the fact that he was like a late breakout in college. And so from what I've heard from people, the late breakout in college thing that people freak out about is that there is this, I don't even know if it's a theory or there is actual, I think there is evidence towards, is that a player is going to break out at an age, kind of normally in their early 20s. And it's kind of why you want to draft a guy who's 21 versus drafting a guy who's 24. Because if he's 24 and productive in college, he might have already had that kind of athletic breakout, rather than you get him at the NFL at 21 and he has that athletic breakout 3 years into his career. I don't think that's a fair knock on Leggett, though, because I think he had an injury early in his career. There was the COVID year whereby he didn't get a play. And I think he also like lost both his parents in like an 18-month span or something like that. Might not be quite exactly, but there's like something, some off-field stuff that weren't like his problems or anything. So he was really good in his final year.
Yeah, played all 13 games in his senior season. So there is some durability there.
There's a lot of late breakouts this class as well. I think you're right with the COVID thing, that it's just like that. We have like a load of the quarterbacks are late breakouts, like Michael Penix, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, all late breakouts. You got Roma Dunze, we just spoke about, technically another late breakout. So I'm not really, at least they broke out, right? I'd rather they broke out late than broke out early and didn't do anything after that.
The other receiver I want to touch on is a receiver that I wouldn't draft. However, I think he's probably the fourth best receiver in this class, and it's Jermaine Burton out of Alabama. He is, athletically, he's one of the best athletes in this class. Like, I think tracking data puts him like in the same range of Malik Nabers in terms of being an athlete. Was plenty productive, tested absolutely fine, nice big receiver, all that stuff. But I think he left Georgia and Kirby Smart basically said to him, like, you either get in line or you get out. And he chose to get out. And then he punched like a female fan when Alabama lost to Tennessee. So he's the type of wide receiver who I think is easily going to wind up being good in the NFL. But there's probably at least half the teams in the NFL that he just won't exist on the draft board because they'll be like, I can't. Like, I know. So Baltimore, for example, when the Ray Rice thing happened, and they basically have a thing whereby domestic violence or anything like that, they won't draft a player. And there was like a Zay Flowers incident at the before the AFC Championship game this year, apparently. Like, the Ravens just won't have Jermaine Burton on their draft board because of that incident. And they won't be the only one. There'll be probably at least another 10 teams that'll be similar.
But you're always going to get some. What I remember about this, and I've just Googled it, it was the Alabama coach Nick Saban said he had reason not to suspend receiver Jermaine Burton from Saturday's game against Mississippi State after video surfaced that appeared to show Burton strike a woman who stormed the field when the Tennessee beat the Crimson Tide last week. What that reason was, Saban wouldn't say. Now, from my point of view, that just smells of bullshit. You know, if you're not having hit somebody, whether it's male or female, that stormed the field, you've got to come out and say why that you're prepared to play them and you're not prepared to actually suspend somebody for striking a fan, of which there is no great defense for. Max, where would you stand? I mean, certainly from your Dynasty League point of view, he might have the talent, but, you know, he could flame out.
Jermaine Burton is being drafted very, very lowly at the minute. He's going maybe the 10th, 11th, 12th wide receiver off the board currently in rookie drafts, but these things change a lot after the draft. So if he is drafted highly, I expect that to come all the way back up. I think with Burton and Alabama maybe not having like a typical, you know, Alabama year, they're a bit more down than you'd expect. I don't think he really shone as some of the other guys, or as well, doesn't have the upside. So fantasy football is all about, you know, the upside. So people like even like a Devontae Walker, who isn't as good of a player as Jermaine Burton, but is just a speed demon and has the upside of, you know, getting so many yards after the catch. People like him at this moment in time are going ahead of a guy like Jermaine Burton, despite not necessarily being a better player. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, we get that. There's always people that are going to fall, but the problem is, Gordon, there's always a coach, there's always a GM that thinks, no, the guy's broken, but I can fix him. I get slightly worried about that, I have to say.
There's the guy who, there's the coaches and the GMs who think they can fix them, and then there's also the small handful who are like, do you know what? We are not here to be good people. We are here to win football games and win championships. And it's something that comes up all the time in terms of like how you want to be as a fan. Like, I know I don't want my team drafting players that are doing that in the field. There's a lot of fans out there that are fine with it. Deshaun Watson went for 3 first round picks and a fully guaranteed contract. Like, everything was out in the public domain there, and an NFL team who very possibly could be a team that would have no issues drafting Jermaine Burton were quite happy to make that trade. So, yeah, there's, as much as there are teams who will not have him on the draft board, there will be teams that will be looking at this and saying, oh, that's a guy we're going to get in the third round because no one's touching him in the first or second.
You don't feel bad for Deshaun Watson, though, Gordon, because he gets paid hundreds of millions of dollars to go down to Texas and then they ban pornography and that's him totally stuck. Can't get a massage, can't access pornography. What's a guy to do?
Hey-ho. So it's a simple question for you. When you play your own versions of fantasy football, because we all play it,
Hang on. We don't all play it. Your son plays it for you. That's you in the league. And so, Max, just for clarity, we have a Stramash league, and every year Paul drafts, and it's not his team. It's his son's team. So the rest of us play fantasy football. Actually, that's not. Ian drafts his team at the start of the year and then just ignores it because he hates fantasy football.
I draft a kicker. I do like I do like Dynasty, though. That was a fantastic soap opera. Blake Carrington is my favorite.
If Blake Carrington was your favorite, then you're obviously not watching Heather Locklear, but that's another story.
It's a relevant question.
No, hang on. I've just got to check. Yeah, I won the Fantasy Football League this year. Just double check that there, just to make sure. So yeah, the victory was mine. Ian, my friend, you may come in now.
Yeah, in Dynasty Fantasy Football, if you do very badly with your team, do you get fired?
No, you get the first overall pick for the next year's rookie class.
So that's not very realistic, because in the NFL, if you do badly, you get fired as a coach.
Yeah, well, actually, I should do that in one of my new leagues, where if you come last, you just get kicked out and you have to go.
Yeah, never allowed to play again.
That's a brilliant idea.
And then it'll just go in a kind of crescendo up to just one person that's won all of Dynasty Fantasy Football, and they can hold the title forevermore.
But you have to give their like 3 years buy-in, just like their contract, right? They get that guarantee after they get fired, right?
Yeah. And anytime you win, if you win the league, you get like 5-year contract, right? So like you're safe for 5 years if you win the league. So I was not in this, but at PFF, someone set up like a few dynasty leagues, and one of our guys won that league because while it was the first year, and while everyone else was obviously setting up the roster for like the next few years, he literally just went in and said, well, I'm going to win it this year because I'm going to draft like a fantasy team for this year. And he won it that year and has performed terribly ever since, but he didn't really care because he got the win he was hoping for.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the balance of the whole thing. It's like, what are you going to do? So there's always like doing a draft. The big one right now seems to be people asking themselves in a startup, if you're taking all these new players, are you taking someone like a Tyreek Hill, or do you go and risk it on like a Malik Nabers? So that's the kind of like that balance that you have to find. It's really interesting.
So to actually ask the question that I was trying to ask, do you have a character rule in your own teams? You know, do you care that somebody is a Deshaun Watson, or, you know, do you have a moral clause in your team, or do you just go for the guys that are going to bring you points?
I don't have any moral clause. Well, because Deshaun Watson isn't benefiting in any way by being on my team. So yeah. I don't really see why I should have any qualms about taking guys like that on my team, because it's just, it's numbers and letters on a screen, not really actual people.
I agree. There are people, I've seen people tweet about how they will not draft certain players, and I don't know. I wouldn't, like I said earlier, there's players that I wouldn't want the Ravens to have on the roster. There's stuff that happens whereby you're like, I hope that player gets cut. I don't think that, for me anyway, that doesn't extend to fantasy football, and it doesn't extend to betting.
There we go. Right. Simple question for you to start our second segment, which is about running backs. And I just want a number from you. Okay. Give it a quick thought and give me the number. What percentage chance a running back gets drafted in the first round? Gordon.
-385.
Mags.
I was going to go with zero, but apparently that's too low. Not low enough, sorry.
Ian.
More chance of Gordon kissing a girl, finally.
I will say, based on free agency, there is one team that it wouldn't entirely shock me if their owner decides that he needs a new star at running back. And if there's one team that will take a running back in the first round, it's the Cowboys. I don't think there's a running back that's close to being... Yeah, there you go. See?
I've just written it down, the Dallas Cowboys. As you mentioned that one team, I thought I'll write it down and see if we agree.
Also, their running back room is... I actually quite like Desvon, but he is tiny. And I quite like Rico Dowdle. I hope I've not done a Cameron and mispronounced his name. But like they don't have a standout running back at this point.
Yeah, but their running back room is now an Airbnb. They're just trying to make some sort of money out of it while they possibly can. Okay, second question. The chance that high second round for a running back, percentage-wise, Gordon?
So high, let's define high though, so that I know where we're going.
Top 15 of the second round, top half of the second round. So basically,
20%.
20%. Max, you think somebody will go in that sort of top 48?
Yeah, I was going to go a little bit higher again. I was going to say 25% for that.
And we'll get the real answer from Ian, as we always do. Ian?
Does it matter at all?
Same. It's the realism I love about Ian. Let's talk about running backs. I think the Saints managed to sign two fullbacks for some bizarre reason. Anyway, where are we looking, guys? I mean, you know, are we looking at Jalen Wright, Tennessee, Bucky Irving, Oregon, you know, Jonathan Brooks, Texas? Are these the kind of names that we expect to go off the board first in this position?
So I actually really like this running back class. It's just that it fits within today's NFL. We're like, I'm not having to draft any of them early, but like the top running backs in this draft, Jonathan Brooks, I think he would probably be borderline first round if it hadn't been for the injury. Jalen Wright is an incredible athlete. Blake Corum, like, runs really well for a guy his size. Trey Benson's probably my favorite running back in this class out of Florida State. Like, there's going to be a bunch of running backs that come off the board in the second, third, fourth round that are going to be really productive guys in the NFL.
Yeah, there's no star, right? There's no Bijan, there's no Breece Hall, there's no big star at the end of it, because Trevon Henderson has decided to go back. Next year, by the way, next year, look out, there's a lot of running backs coming out then. But yeah, there's no like big running back star for this class.
Ian, do you see, I mean, somebody like, you know, Blake Corum in Michigan, you know, is Harbaugh tempted to draft him somewhere just because he knows him?
I think we said that last week. He'd be tempted not to draft him because he knows him because of the injury he had. So if anybody knows if he's lost a step or whatever, then it would be Harbaugh. So probably doesn't take him.
I liked him. I thought he was fairly solid. And sometimes, Gordon, you need players that they might not be spectacular, but if he likes his character, you know, you can rely on him. That can be something.
I think he's the type of running back that's going to fit their system as well. They went out and signed Gus Edwards from the Ravens. Like, they are building like a Ravens West over there, whereby they are going to they are very much telling you right now, if you look at what they've done at the wide receiver position, which is just empty the room, like they are going to run the ball. And right now they probably need to add to that room. So if it's not Blake Corum, I think they're probably a team that drafts a running back in the top four rounds.
Yeah, it'd be poetic justice, right? If Gus Edwards is the guy getting touchdowns vultured off him at the goal line for once.
I do like the idea of the Chargers changing a name to Ravens West. I think there's something poetic about that. That'd be terrific.
The West Wing.
Yeah.
Ian, I mean, Gordon's mentioned the Cowboys have emptied their room. You know, there are teams that are going to be looking to try and bring somebody in, and then the temptation is that you can overlook. I mean, Jonathan Brooks, the problem is he had a torn ACL. That's never a great thing in college, and immediately the flags are out for that.
Yeah, I'm not as high in this class as Gordon is. I think there's one guy that you would put on your board you definitely want to draft, and then the rest, they're just effectively too many question marks, and they would end up just being committee members on your team. So I would possibly see teams competing for Trey Benson. I think Benson's probably the highest in teams' boards, and you might start to see some trade up in the second round if teams start worrying that somebody else might pick up Benson. But I'm not really kind of fussed, other than the kind of big guys like Braylon Allen and Audrey Kistemi, who are always kind of hilarious to watch them just plough straight forward with people hanging off their ankles.
Braylon Allen had an Instagram post this week of him standing next to Derrick Henry. Is that where you were going as well?
I was going to say the same thing, yeah.
It's terrifying. So Braylon Allen is what, like 6'2", 245 pounds, massive for a running back, and he looks... very average size next to Derrick Henry, who's just an absolute monster.
He looks like he's on work experience. Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
Never stand beside Derrick Henry. Right, yeah, there we go.
Don't. Definitely don't. Every single draft class, though, there are like running backs that come out and don't get drafted early, and they wind up being, you know, undrafted free agents or late round guys who wind up being really good. And there's guys at the back end of this class. I think it's Kimani Vidal, the guy from Troy.
Yeah.
Like, really good running back. The thing that worries me a little bit is he played like an absolute ton of snaps, and for a guy that size, like, that worries me a little bit. But I could easily see him in the right system.
That's one thing about Jonathan Brooks as well. Even with the injury, he had sort of the, I don't know if it's a luxury or not, but he played behind Bijan Robinson all those years at Texas. So he's got a ton of tread left on the tires, even with that injury. So yeah, he's going to be good whenever he eventually clears the ACL. He might not be good this year, but next year I think he still will be a decent player. Someone who I've seen nobody really chat about is the guy that was the rushing leader in the SEC by nearly 500 yards. It was Cody Schrader out of Missouri. Nobody's talking about him at all. So I find that confusing, because a lot of people are saying he might not get drafted, he's not a great prospect, but if you're not great, how can you lead the SEC by nearly 500 yards, which is incredible. He almost cracked the top 10 all time.
This whole draft class has players like that for me that I don't understand where the narrative has come from on them. So, like, getting very briefly away from running backs, there's a guy, Javon Foster, who plays left tackle at Missouri. He's a three-year starter at left tackle in the SEC, was good as a three-year left tackle in the SEC, which is the toughest conference in football. And everywhere I look, he is available in like the fifth round. So it happens every year whereby players just don't get that same thing. And then, so the other thing, if I had to make a prediction on a fit that happens, Jalen Wright feels like a Cleveland Brown. Like, he's 21. He's a good athlete. Like, the Browns do, when they draft, they have like guardrails, like, because of how they approach everything from a very analytical perspective, that they target players at certain ages, they target players certain athletic profiles and stuff like that. And with the, like, Nick Chubb getting up there in age, coming off another injury and all those things, the Browns will probably draft a running back, and it'll probably be second, third, fourth round. I think Jalen Wright is probably a fit there.
They've got guardrails to stop Deshaun Watson getting in any powers as well.
They need minders, not guardrails. Ian, just in that thing we talk about overuse of a guy in college, and a couple of names have been mentioned there, but if you can get the guy, say, round 4 or 5, and he's going to be your RB2, your RB3, he might actually benefit from a year or two of not being overused and actually a chance to almost rest and recuperate. Is that fair?
I think it's more kind of accumulation rather than something that's regenerative. But if somebody's taken a lot of snaps in college and they've got good ball security, then that's something that would give coaches quite a lot of mental respite. They don't want to put somebody in that doesn't have a lot of carries and then they end up fumbling the ball because they're not used to taking that level of hits while running. So that's kind of one thing to look at. Another key factor when selecting running backs is, can they pass protect? Because if they can pass protect, they're always going to find their way onto a roster as a third down specialist. If they can't pass protect, if they get their quarterbacks killed, then they're not going to stick around for long.
It's interesting. So can we expect, or is it reasonable to expect, that one or two of these running backs will simply just surprise us with the amount of use that they get? You know, it's all the wide receivers, Mags, that are getting the headlines, but, you know, there's room there for a superstar to emerge. Fair?
Yeah, but just look around the NFL. Running back, more than any other position, is just an opportunity. You just need that. Like, Isaiah Pacheco was a 7th-round draft pick. Same with Kyren Williams at the Rams. But as soon as they got an opportunity, they literally ran with it. So these guys could go anywhere. You never know what's going to happen. But if they get an opportunity and then keep producing, then why would you take them out? You play the hot hand running back. So I wouldn't be shocked by any of these guys we've seen. And like, I didn't think Kyren Williams was very good, and look at him go. So yeah, I wouldn't be shocked with anyone.
Now, I missed last week's program, so I got suitably kicked by everybody on it, which was lovely as always, which always appreciate. So I've not had a chance to have a go at Charles or Jamie, and I might before the show is out. Anything else grabbing your interest? And the reason I said that is because there was an indication, I can't remember how much we talked about the Welshman signing for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, the Chiefs are getting desperate. They're recruiting Welshmen now. Is that fair?
Yeah.
I kind of like... It's so low risk, and I was very, very skeptical, and we've talked about this in the podcast before. The thing that is so hard for these players when they come in as adults and they don't go through college football is you get into the NFL and there's so much you need to know about. If you're a wide receiver, you need to know how to read man against zone so that you know if it's an option route that you're, you know, cutting certain ways and all those things. And you just have to know like a wide playbook. But his time when he was at the pro day for the International Pathway guys, where he ran like in the 4.4s, like at a guy his size, that's impressive. And he goes to a team whereby Andy Reid, if he winds up in that regular season roster, Andy Reid will have plays whereby he gets the ball in a reverse. Or like the thought of the Chiefs building in like some rugby laterals into their offense that's already very difficult to stop. It's just really fucking annoying, to be honest. Like, I'm kind of sick of this. Like, if we can just fast forward to, like, let's skip 10 years down the line. Patrick Mahomes retires. Great. He's won another 4 Super Bowls. Wonderful. Let's get back to, you know, and let's get to the point where the NFC have the quarterback that you can't win against.
I'm going to ask a stupid question because Cameron's not here to do it for us. Can you see Lewis Reed-Zammit teaching not so much a lateral, but an actual rugby pass, spin pass lateral? You know, because, you know, it's a different, it's one thing to throw the ball with one hand, but obviously the rugby pass is a slightly different thing. Could you see him trying to influence with a rugby pass?
Travis Kelce is dying to do it already. Look at almost every Chiefs game, Travis Kelce looks to throw a lateral. He does sometimes, and if Kadarius Toney doesn't line up offside, some of them actually work as well. So he's someone I think will be begging Andy Reid to let Lewis Reed-Zammit include some laterals, teach him a few things. You know, I actually got in trouble online. It was when Reed-Zammit ran his first 40 time, he ran a 4.50 flat, and I was like, that's not that fast. And Welsh fans just came after me so much. I think they were still bitter about winning the wooden spoon in the Six Nations.
Well, it's nice to see them collect something, so that's fine. Ian, I've got a question for you. Is it fair to hold a single fan responsible for their whole fan base and the bad conduct to that fan base?
It might not be fair, but it could be deemed appropriate depending on the fan.
Thank you. So you've given me permission. So, Mags, I've really got to pull you up on this one because... The news that came out today, and you might not have spotted this story, is an Oklahoma judge ordered a Kansas City Chiefs superfan, known as Chiefsaholic, who admitted to a series of bank robberies, to pay $10.8 million to a bank teller he threatened and assaulted with a gun. A judge in Tulsa handed down the order last week against Xavier Michael Budabar, who was well known for attending Chiefs games dressed as a wolf in the NFL team's gear. Former bank teller Peyton Garcia alleged Budabar used a gun to assault her during a robbery in Oklahoma Credit Union in December 2022. He's been ordered to pay $3.6 million for injuries and loss of income. Not quite sure what you get paid as a bank teller in Oklahoma, but I'm in the wrong job. And $7.2 million in punitive damages. Obviously, Mags, we have to hold you responsible.
Yep. I mean, the funny thing is, he's still got better hands than Kadarius Toney, so.
he might need a contract like him. That's for sure. The NFL never fails to surprise. Gentlemen, any other stories catching your eye before we wrap up this edition of Stramash?
The only other thing, I don't think it's official yet, but the suggestion is that the Eagles game to open the season, was it the Friday? In Brazil is going to be the Packers because the Packers technically have more fans in Brazil than they have in Green Bay. If you do the maths and work out like what they've said the percentage of NFL fans there are in Brazil and the breakdown of what the Brazilian fan base is, the percentage of Packers fans in Brazil actually winds up being a higher number than the population of Green Bay.
You guess the colors. Is that just because they're playing green
and
yellow?
It has to be. It has to be the same because there's nothing else about Green Bay that feels remotely flamboyant like Brazil. That'll be a great game. And is that like 3 p.m., 8 p.m. on the Friday for us? Is it like a 3 p.m.? I'm sure it's the. If that's the case, that'll be tremendous. Yeah. Great game to get at that time.
That would be tremendous. I mean, Ian, it's the kind of game that if you get the chance, Eagles Packers that early in the season, that's tasty.
Yeah. I suppose, I don't really care. Give us whatever, it doesn't matter.
You'll beat them anyway, basically. Yeah, that's what you're trying to say. A couple of minor stories. The NFL Network released an awful lot of staff this week, an awful lot of on-air talent, which was quite a surprise.
The Good Morning Football thing is just really, really weird because so on the face of it, it's like, okay, they're moving to LA and that's fine. But then the first part that seemed weird was like in the middle of draft season, they're going on hiatus while they move to LA, which is like, okay, it's kind of weird that you're moving at the height of that when there's a whole bit that happens after the draft whereby people stop caring. So you can just do that. And then all the goodbyes from all the people there was a lot of like not confirming that they will definitely be one of the hosts of it. You know, it was like, can't remember the name, not Peter Schrager, but the other guy was saying like, I'll still be involved, but he stopped short of saying I will be a host and I'll be moving to LA and all that stuff. So the whole thing definitely felt a little bit strange.
I don't understand how you can take something that's so successful, which is aimed at that Eastern time zone market anyway, to start the day. I mean, why would you want to move it to the West Coast time zone, forcing the people to get up at stupid o'clock? It doesn't actually make any sense to me.
No, me neither.
Yeah, Jamie Erdahl, I think, has been confirmed she's going. Much better host than Kay Adams anyway. I actually started to watch it again. I thought it was much better. And they're taking it. Was it Kyle Brandt that I think indicated he
might still... Brandt, that was it. Yeah. He said he was still doing it. And I think they're all... it's a good place for ex-players to kind of like cut their teeth on doing a lot of this stuff. I think it's been a good way for ex-players to kind of get involved because it's like a just general chatty format. They do a bunch of stuff in the off season where they bring players on and all that stuff. So I hope it continues in pretty much the same format it has. And I hope that Paul survives next week when Cameron comes back and he finds out that you've insulted Kay Adams.
Well, that's just the way it goes. Ian, you've been catching up with other people. Tell us a little bit more.
I have. I've got other friends. One of them spells his name incorrectly with a Z. Let's find out why. Hello, and welcome to this special episode of Stramash, where we can bring you breaking news. The New York Jets have won something, finally! But it's not the Super Bowl, but it's just as good. We are joined by International Fan of the Year, Fraser Campbell. Fraser, how are you, sir?
I'm good, thanks. And yourself?
I'm not too bad. I think the first thing that everybody's going to ask you is a very kind of diligent and concerned audience that we have. Why is Fraser spelled with a Z instead of an S? Is it to make you look more youthful and street?
You know what? I've actually no idea. I've never asked my parents that question. believe it or not, my name was a last minute change. I was going to be called John Paul, but because my dad's got red hair, Mum decided to change that name. She didn't think it would be a fit. So, yeah, I've no idea why it's a Z, to be honest.
Well, you revealing that information, half of our podcast audience has now went, I know what team you support. And it's true, that is the team you do support.
I do indeed, I support Celtic, yes.
So explain how that has fed into you having a love of the New York Jets.
I think what it was is growing up as a Celtic fan, once I first got into NFL, it was basically, I wanted to always go to America. I'd never been to America at the time, but I'd always wanted to, when I started watching it, support a team who I know I realistically one day could actually go and visit in America and watch play. So I think that obviously it made it easier. It was a kind of East Coast kind of side was going to be the easiest option. And then the more I looked into it and seen the Jets green and white, the Giants red, white and blue, and the whole Celtic Rangers thing growing up, I think it was a no-brainer. There was no other team for me, to be honest. But also at the time, the Jets weren't very good. So I didn't want to support a team who was a winning team as such. I didn't want to be classified as a glory hunter. So yeah, so it kind of came down to being a Celtic fan, just the whole green and white thing, really.
I think that's the kind of sentiment that any Scotsman would have, is you always back the underdog first. You never go for the kind of big gun. But
yeah,
have you had a chance to see the Jets in person yet?
Yeah. So I've seen them in America against. I've seen them play at Jacksonville. I've seen them play at Miami. I was over in November and watched them at MetLife for the first time against the Chargers. I've seen them play Miami at Wembley, and I've seen them play the Falcons at Tottenham. So, yeah, I've seen them five times, I think, and I think I've got a one-win record so far out of it.
Well, considering that's the Jets, that might actually mean that you're good luck.
Yeah.
Can you explain to us a little bit about the award that you've won then? Because it is a pretty impressive achievement.
Yeah, so it's the first year that the NFL have actually done this award. So it's International Fan of the Year. So every year, obviously, I'm sure people are aware that they do it in America and they just have the Fan of the Year. So this year they decided to do it for the international fan base, which is obviously a huge thing for all the fans and for every team in the NFL. It was an application process. You apply for it. They ask various questions, you know, how you become a fan, what you do for the Jets community, such as your team's community, you know, i.e. whether it's groups, podcasts, events, charity work, anything like that. You just put yourself forward. And then it was kind of out of my hands, to be honest. It was then in the Jets' hands to decide who they felt that should win this award for the first time.
Are you quite active in the NFL community in the UK with regards to promoting the game over here?
I'd say promoting the game not such. I actually live in Isle of Man now, which is obviously, it's quite tough because I'm not actually on the mainland UK. However, when it comes to the Jets and the fan group that I help run, so I run a page called Gangrene UK. it's me and, well, it started off originally as me and three other people who set it up. My wife designing the logo for the group. I think we had like 40 people in the Facebook group, which now we've got, I think, near 1,000 in a private group. We never had a Twitter page. We never had an Instagram page. So we kind of we set it up from nothing because we didn't think there was many Jets fans in the UK at that point. Yeah, and we've kind of grown it now, and we've had all sorts of different events. We have game day events in the UK. We have draft parties in the UK. We've had various guests. We've had people like Nick Mangold, Santonio Holmes, Jeff Reinbold, that everybody obviously knows from the UK NFL side. Cody Carberg, who was the first ever female scout in the NFL. You know, we've had various guests now, and we have a good connection with the Jets for organising events throughout the season, which is good. And we actually run one this year in tow with the Dolphins and Sky Sports, who also attended the event and done their Sunday night game from the actual event. So, yeah, we do quite a bit for the Jets on the side of things, but in regards to NFL as a whole, I think we're solely just focused on our team right now.
We're calling your kind of group the Gangrene. Have you had any confused orthopaedic surgeons apply to join in error?
Not that I've seen, but you just never know, do you?
And it was a kind of special way that the NFL let you know that you'd won the award, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I basically got an email asking to come on for a Zoom call with the Jets. They just had further queries, a few more questions to ask me. So yeah, it was totally, it was a bit of a shock. I wasn't expecting it at the time. So obviously it's always a good way to hear from any player and the team announcing you as the first ever, you know, international fan of the year. So it was a really shocking but special moment, yeah.
And the NFL are going to be inviting you over to the draft in the USA, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm heading over there, it'll be just under 4 weeks now. So I'm flying out. I think as far as I'm aware right now, we've got a Q&A session with Roger Goodell on the Wednesday before the draft. We've got various events throughout the week. Obviously, we'll be in the inner circle. So each team has been selected, each international fan has been selected for each team. We'll be in the inner circle, which is like a VIP area just at the front of the stage. You can't buy tickets for it. It's like team invite. I think it's like 12 people per team get invited each year. So we'll be doing that. I think as far as I'm aware, I'm possibly announcing a draft pick for the Jets as well on stage. Yeah, and there's various other things going on. I was over in London a couple of weeks ago at the Bears Jets women's flag football event, where I was lucky enough to meet Quincy Williams from the Jets. Neil Reynolds was there and various other people from the NFL community, and it was a good day, to be honest. Yeah, so they've been really good so far.
You understand with the kind of inner circle bit, it's going to be the fans that the cameras always pan to whenever they make a draft pick. And you're going to have like 11 Americans going crazy, and you're just going to have the kind of one Scotsman kind of standing there just kind of like, hello.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky enough that you actually get to take a guest with you. So I'm taking my wife, which she's actually a big Eagles fan. So I've managed to convince her to wear some Jets gear for the 3 nights. So
the lady of impeccable taste, what can I say? And who are you hoping the Jets might actually draft on draft night?
It's a tough one. Obviously, there's certain needs that the Jets need. You know, the normal O-line, another weapon would be nice. Personally, there's one player in the draft who I think taking him at 10 might be a bit high, that I really like, and that's Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. Really, really like him. I think you're probably best if you can get down to about 15, maybe trade back to about 15, it'd be an ideal spot for him. But I think sitting at 10, I don't think the Jets can really go wrong. I think they're going to walk away with a really good old lineman there. Either Brock Bowers, the tight end, who's obviously a special player, or a good wide receiver, or even a trade back. I think there's so many options, but it's so hard to know what they're going to do this year. But I think Brian Thomas Jr. is the one player that I really like, what I've seen of him on tape in game days.
Well, it's going to be quite interesting for you as a Jets fan, because essentially you've got a kind of bonus free agent that's been added, because your quarterback that was going to come in and save the franchise last year. He went down almost immediately with a severe injury, and Aaron Rodgers should be back now, should be fit, and it's having a brand new player effectively coming in. So you must be excited to see him finally playing in Jets green and white.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, last year that first game, it was a ride of emotions. You know, we had the emotions of the Rodgers coming out with the flag, and it was like, you know, this is our time after years and years of pain to what happened to him four plays in, you know, being devastated, and then to still go and win the game in overtime the way we did with a kick return. It was just there's so many emotions that the game itself was tough, but. Yeah, hopefully this year he can stay healthy and O-line can stay healthy. I mean, every year something happens with the Jets and it's just like a sucker punch. But fingers crossed this year, yeah, we can keep everybody healthy.
So you brought in Tyron Smith at tackle. You brought in Morgan Moses at tackle, which is clearly an attempt to keep Rodgers standing upright.
Yeah.
If you have Rodgers fit for the full season, can the Jets usurp the Bills? Can they actually beat the AFC East and get into the playoffs?
I think they can if everybody stays healthy. I mean, you just have to look at it last year with the struggles that we had, and really, we still were pretty good at times. Offensively, we were the second part of the season, we were non-existent. It was hard to get going. We couldn't do anything. We couldn't move the ball. We couldn't do anything in the red zone. So it was very, very tough. But defensively, we've stayed pretty solid from the core group that we had last year. We've still got a few that have went to free agency, like Sashan Davis and Hardy, a few others in special teams that hopefully we'll bring back. But the defence, which was, I'd say, a top three to top five defence last year, is still pretty solid. So if we can just build in that offence and keep Rodgers healthy, I can't see any reason why we can't compete in that division, to be honest.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about the NFL. Every single team thinks they've got a chance before the season starts.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing also about the Jets is they've been kind of conditioned, if you understand Pavlov's theory of conditioning, and I want to actually test it out and see if it works. I'm going to get an automatic unconscious response here. J-A-T-S.
Jets, Jets, Jets.
There we go. There we go. Fraser Campbell, thank you so much for joining us. Please promise when you're at the NFL draft, when you're down at the front, you will be waving a salt tire about like mad.
I'll try. I'll try and get one in there somehow.
Right, everybody keep an eye out for Fraser then on draft day. Fraser, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Ian. That was terrific. Always good to get a new voice on the podcast. Max, hopefully you've enjoyed coming along onto the podcast. What's ahead for you in the next few weeks and months?
Yeah, I've absolutely loved it, guys. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's been great. I'm just going through mock drafts with people on my show. You can find it on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, at Dynasty Hot Seat. Look it up on YouTube as well if you want to see some mock drafts. And if you don't play Dynasty Fantasy Football, give it a go. It is a hell of a lot of fun.
Fantastic. We appreciate you joining us. That is it. That's the full-time whistle on Stramash, the podcast of the NFL Scotland team. The adults will be back next week, I am sure. But for now, for Gordon McInnes, for Ian, Stephen and Max, this is Paul Mitchell saying thank you for listening. Bye for now.